For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Rheumatic heart disease is emblematic of closing the gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. It is almost unique to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population and is driven by social determinants of health, such as poverty, overcrowding, and poor hygienic conditions. Australia's rates of acute rheumatic fever and rheumatic heart disease are the highest in the world, a shameful statistic for a developed nation. The End RHD Coalition has set itself the task of eliminating rheumatic heart disease in Australia, with an Aboriginal-led blueprint bringing together researchers, Aboriginal communities, and a mixed model of funding. Professor Jonathan Karapetis, director of the Telethon Kids Institute, is co-chair of End RHD, along with Pat Turner, the CEO of the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation. Jonathan and Professor Alex Brown from the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute have written an editorial on rheumatic heart disease for the journal. Professor Karapetis is my special guest today.
So rheumatic heart disease is a chronic disease of the heart valves, and it's caused by a condition called acute rheumatic fever, which in turn is caused by an infection with a bacterium, a bug called strep A, group A streptococcus. So to take it back to square one, when you're usually a young person, primary school age kid, gets a sore throat or a skin sore due to the strep bug. In a small proportion of people who get that infection, their immune response that they raise to try and get rid of the infection also starts damaging their own tissues. It's an autoimmune response. And that can cause you to be sick. It causes your joints to swell, you to have a temperature. That's acute rheumatic fever. You usually have to go to hospital. And by and large, you know, you get better from that. It can cause you to be quite unwell, but you can get all of the things get better, but there's a part of the body that can be damaged that may not get better, and that's the heart valves. And if you get a bad case of acute rheumatic fever, or you get multiple episodes of it where you get future strep infections, that gets worse and worse. Your heart valves get leaky, and that's rheumatic heart disease. That can cause you to have heart failure and, of course, can cause you to die early.
Once you've been diagnosed with rheumatic heart disease, is it fixable?
It's not curable, but there are things we can do. So if you've got heart failure, you can go on medications, like a lot of people who've got heart failure from other causes go on. But then if your heart valves are very severely affected, then you can have surgery. And there are different approaches that can be taken to repair the heart valve, in bad cases to actually replace the heart valve with an artificial or a kind of tissue-based heart valve. Those are all, they can be life-saving, absolutely, but they don't cure the problem.
No.
So we don't have anything that says you no longer have rheumatic heart disease because we've treated you and it's gone. What happens, though, is you as you get older, you grow out of the risk of getting rheumatic fever again.
Yes.
And your body, if it gets to a point where the heart valves are not getting rheumatic fever again, they can gradually get improved so that it might be 10 years later you do an echocardiogram, an ultrasound of your heart, and it looks pretty normal.
Now, you've written this editorial for the MJA, pretty strongly worded one, which is why I'm talking to you. Why are Indigenous communities getting acute rheumatic fever more than non-Indigenous communities?
The critical point here is that we have no evidence that Indigenous people in Australia are more susceptible than anybody else to acute rheumatic fever or rheumatic heart disease.
Right.
We know that there are some elements that are caused by genetics to make some people more likely to get rheumatic heart disease, but that's true in any population. So not everybody has the same risk of getting it. We don't understand the exact details, but we've got a pretty good idea that somewhere between 2 and 5% of most populations have a particular susceptibility to rheumatic fever. But there's no evidence that we have right now that the Aboriginal people have a higher proportion of people who are susceptible. Why, therefore, do Aboriginal people get it more than non-Aboriginal people in this country? It's because of all the other factors. It's basically because they get exposed a lot more to the bacterium. The strep A bacterium causes rheumatic fever. Why do they get exposed more? Because of overcrowded living conditions, because of the poor hygienic conditions in which people can live in, particularly remote settings, because of impeded access to healthcare. So it's basically It's a disease of what we call the social determinants of health. And that's the critical aspect that we have to come to terms with. Right now, the rate of rheumatic fever in Aboriginal people in Northern Australia, in Aboriginal kids, is the same level as we saw in suburban Melbourne back in the 1930s and 1940s. So we are seeing ongoing epidemics which Australia has not really tackled properly because it's in Aboriginal people and by and large Aboriginal people who live in the rural and remote settings a long way away from the, if you like, the power centres of Canberra, Melbourne and Sydney.
And how do we rate globally in terms of the rates?
Unfortunately, we're right at the top of the league table. So in terms of a rate per head of population, the rates of acute rheumatic fever are highest in the world in Australia.
Wow.
The rates of rheumatic heart disease are as high as we see in sub-Saharan African countries or Pacific countries. So we do have a population that suffers in the same level of disease as some of the poorest countries in the world. Luckily for them, I guess, they're in a country where we can provide good medical care. So they don't die at the same rate, though we are still seeing quite a few people dying of this disease, but they're still getting ongoing cases. And I've been at this for more than a couple of decades, mm-hmm. and we just need to take a dramatically different approach to what we've taken into account.
What has been the approach so far?
Well, it's been underwhelming in terms of the attention paid and the investment put into it.
Yeah.
The governments have kind of recognised that this is not something that is right, that there's an injustice here. And so we have seen investment from state and Commonwealth governments over the years. I would say woefully inadequate, but we are seeing of the order of $6 million a year put into control programs around the country by the Commonwealth. They're by and large programs that are designed to identify who's got rheumatic fever or rheumatic heart disease and then focus on the mainstay of management, which is regular injections of penicillin. So if you've got rheumatic fever or rheumatic heart disease, you're supposed to get this painful injection every 4 weeks of penicillin. The idea being that you've always got penicillin in your bloodstream, and if you encounter a new strep bug, you won't get infected by it and you won't get rheumatic fever again.
Will you develop
it's important. You don't know. It's quite fascinating. Strep A is about the only bacterium that has never become resistant to penicillin.
Wow.
We have no idea why. We're very fortunate in that regard. So you're not going to get resistant to penicillin. Unfortunately, it's a painful injection. It's not fun to have.
Not at all.
But it does work. But what it doesn't do is stop people getting rheumatic fever in the first place. And that's why what we haven't done adequately is tackle the determinants, the root causes, the overcrowded housing, the poor environmental health. And that's what we have started to try and raise awareness of through a coalition that's been formed, and we talk about it in the editorial, it's called EndRHD. If you ask me, the big game changer in trying to tackle rheumatic heart disease in the last few years is the leadership we're seeing from the Aboriginal community-controlled health organisations, because they are standing up and saying, you know what, it's our people who are suffering and dying of this disease, and we want to be, and we must be, they're actually demanding to be at the leadership table in deciding how we're going to tackle it. Something we all have to listen to and we have to essentially agree to, because it's what we've done for the last 20 years has not worked.
Tell me about the RHD endgame strategy.
About 5 or 6 years ago, a whole lot of researchers around the country who've been working on rheumatic fever, rheumatic heart disease, and doing great work over years, we all got together. You know, Australia is the world leader in research on this topic, and we all got together and said, we have a lot of the answers already about what needs to be done. We have some specific research that we still need to do to uncover a few more pieces of information. But what we should be able to do in Australia, more than any other country in the world, is put this all together into a blueprint to get rid of this disease in Australia. And we should start talking about elimination of rheumatic heart disease, not just control. Because if there's one country in the world we should be able to get rid of this, it's ours. And so we got some funding from the National Health and Medical Research Council for a centre of research excellence called the EndRHD CRE. And we spent 5 years pulling together what we knew already, tackling some additional research questions, and then putting it together as the blueprint. which is the end game strategy. So we'll be launching that very soon. Obviously, COVID's put a bit of a spanner in the works in terms of the date of the launch, but we'll be launching it sometime in the next few months. And it is the most comprehensive pulling together of the evidence, mapping it against how it might roll out in terms of policy in this country, looking at the economic implications, and it's really the recipe that we need to implement to get rid of rheumatic heart disease in Australia. There are several different forms of it. There's a shorter and a longer form, but our aim is to say, all right, here's the recipe. Now we need to get behind it and we need to put it into action.
Who would put it into action?
So it's got to be everybody. But what we're saying is that this is why we, at the same time as we were writing the end game strategy, we realised if we were to avoid the pitfalls of people who've done this sort of thing before for other diseases, and you know, we didn't want to just write a lovely document that ended up gathering dust on a bookshelf. If we were to see it live and become and be implemented, we knew that there was a very important piece of the puzzle missing, which is around the advocacy. And so we approached a range of organisations about three or four years ago and said, would you partner with the researchers to form a coalition of organisations dedicated to ending rheumatic heart disease in this country and become essentially initially the advocacy and then increasingly the doing arm of the end game strategy? And that's what was formed, was the NDRHD Coalition, which is now just known as NDRHD. And we brought together the Aboriginal community controlled sector. So it is co-chaired with Pat Turner from NACHO and myself. We've got all the Aboriginal peak bodies from Western Australia, Northern Territory, Queensland, New South Wales and South Australia as members. And so their chief executives sit around the leadership table. We've got Rheumatic Heart Disease Australia, which is a body based at the Menzies School of Health Research. We've got the Heart Foundation. We've got the AMA. We've got a whole lot of affiliate members and charter signatories. So we've got essentially all the organisations in one place who need to both, who will be advocating for it, but also who would be doing the work on the ground. And we are proposing to the Commonwealth Government that the NDRHD Coalition be the, if you like, the implementation arm of the endgame strategy. And the critical aspect there is it has to have Aboriginal leadership. There is absolutely no doubt, and this will be enshrined, I think, in the new Closing the Gap principles that are soon to be announced, that anything that relates to Aboriginal people and Aboriginal health has to be led by Aboriginal people. And so obviously governments are a critical part of it, but it's everybody has to be part of the solution because you can't, there is no silver bullet. At the same time, we're working on a vaccine. That's not going to happen for 10 years or so. We're making great progress on a vaccine, but we are not going to have a silver bullet for rheumatic heart disease. So we have to tackle it from every single angle, which means we need states, territories, Commonwealth government, Aboriginal communities, Aboriginal health organisations, all of us working together on a sustained strategy. And luckily, we now have a blueprint, a recipe, which is the end game strategy for what needs to be done.
Is the funding totally government-based or is there going to be opportunities for private investment maybe?
Yeah, we're very keen to look at a new funding model. I think we've also tended in Aboriginal health to kind of see it as something the government has to sort out, and absolutely government's got a major role to play. But we think there's a role for others in the mix. And you know, we've seen in our research that there are a lot of the corporate sector, the business sector, that has a vested interest here. So resource companies and the like who rely on an Aboriginal workforce, who rely on relationships with Aboriginal communities, our feeling is they're going to be interested. One of the reasons we've got the Heart Foundation involved is that we think there's a significant role for philanthropy. And so we think there's probably a mixed funding model. Government has to play its part, but I think there are a range of organisations that can contribute as well.
I'm chatting with Professor Jonathan Karapetis from the NDRHD Coalition. On the 13th of July 2020, the journal published research by Dr. Joshua Francis and his colleagues, which used echocardiographic screening to estimate the prevalence of rheumatic heart disease in a remote Northern Territory town called Manangreeta. They found a prevalence in 5 to 20-year-olds of at least 10%. That research and Professor Karapetis' co-authored editorial can be found at nja.com.au, where they are both open access. Back to our chat.
Seeing what they did in Manangreeta was so impressive, with pulling together the kind of community level leadership and support. They developed a whole lot of health promotion materials in a local language. They got intense engagement with the whole community. And as a result, they got a whole lot of people participating who otherwise wouldn't. So I think they're setting a bit of an example for how we need to make sure that tackling rheumatic heart disease is done at the community level. And this is really a critical part of the whole endgame strategy, is that it has to be community owned and community run. It can't be top down. I think Maningrida is an exemplar of that. They did find incredibly high rates of rheumatic heart disease.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you mentioned that their results were quite different from an earlier study. Do you know why that might be?
Yeah, it's really interesting, and we don't know, because the earlier study I was involved in, it was mm-hmm. called the GECKO study, and it mm-hmm. was a much bigger study where we took echocardiograms out to Aboriginal communities in Queensland, Northern Territory, both Top End and Central Australia, and Northern Western Australia, the Kimberley, mm-hmm. and we echoed several thousand, I think we echoed 4,000 remote Aboriginal children. And then we also actually echoed about 1,000 urban kids in urban Darwin, yep. just to get a kind of baseline. And we certainly found rheumatic heart disease, but nowhere near the prevalence that was found in Maningrida. And obviously the GECKO study it's only a decade earlier, and I don't think things have changed dramatically that much to explain why suddenly Maningrida's got such a high rate compared to what we found.
Has the technology changed?
No, same. Mm-hmm. We're using the same sort of machine, mm-hmm. so the technology is not particularly better at picking up rheumatic heart disease. And also the Maningrida study found quite a few kids with quite severe disease, whereas right. the GECKO didn't find too many of those. So what we were trying to understand was, has there been a genuine change? Is Maningrida different for some reason than mm. other places? One thing we do postulate in the editorial is that a few years ago there was what was called a cluster, I call it an outbreak of rheumatic fever in Maningrida, and it was quite a large and quite devastating outbreak, okay. which is fascinating in itself because we haven't seen outbreaks in Aboriginal communities previously, but we're starting to see them now. And so one of the things we postulate is whether what the rheumatic heart disease they're finding in Maningrida now could partially be explained by that outbreak several years earlier of acute rheumatic fever. This is the heart damage that resulted from that. And that's possible, and that's why what we would, and I think the authors of the Joseph article were very good in saying, we shouldn't just automatically assume that every Aboriginal community needs routine screening with echoes, right. because that's a big deal. It's quite costly to do that. Now, there may be good advantages to it, but what we're saying is we just need to be a bit cautious to say, let's make sure that each community assesses whether or not there's a particular reason for them to need to include echo screening. That's why part of the endgame strategy would have these sort of national centres of excellence that would be providing advice to communities about things like this, where communities may need additional specialist expertise to make that sort of decision. In the end, we think, and we do know that this is a disease that is an exemplar of closing the gap. It's a disease that is almost in this country unique to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australians, so the rest of us just don't get it. It's caused by the social determinants. It's caused by social injustice, poverty, mm-hmm. and all the things that flow from it. And it is eminently preventable, and we have a recipe for doing something about it. You know, we could actually eliminate rheumatic heart disease in Australia, and that alone would be such a statement to make.
Yes.
The world would look at us and say, wow, if you can do it, we can do it. This is a disease that 33 to 39 million people have around the world.
Wow.
It kills at least 350,000 people a year, almost all of them in developing countries. So they're looking to Australia for leadership, and it's about time we stood up and said, yes, we are going to take that leadership and we're going to implement the endgame strategy. It would be emblematic. It would actually make a significant difference to the gap in itself, yep. but it would demonstrate that, you know what, we can do it, and we can do it by empowering Aboriginal people to take control of their life.
All right. Thanks for your time, Jonathan. Okay. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Good to talk.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.